Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I hope this guy's comfortable. I hope he pulled up a chair. I hope he's got comfortable pants on, because Dove Kramer cleared out the spots so we could do like an unlimited amount of time with this guy.
You only do this, let's be honest too, you only do this for the great ones.
That's right.
You know, like we're talking about the guys with the first name, like, you know, Kareem and Oscar and, you know, all these guys, you know, Wilt. Well, it's the same thing with this guy. We just, all you got to say is Ian, and you know who we're talking about.
That's right. That's right.
The great Ian Eagle. Hi,
I'm sorry. Did I mishear you? Did you say unlimited?
Unlimited. Get comfortable,
unfettered.
Yes.
And unlimited.
Hopefully you went to the restroom already.
Yep.
You ate lunch.
You ready? You ready to rumble? You ready to rock and roll?
I bought canned goods. I'm so prepared.
So I got to tell you this. I was so upset. So Friday night, I'm getting ready to watch the
Don't
the,
do this, because you're going to be taking shots at poor Ryan Rucco.
And this is nothing to do with him. I don't know him. He's a fine guy.
Yeah, he's good. I like Ryan.
He's terrific.
I was a little let down that you weren't doing the game. I was a little bothered by that, you know?
So you're saying you were not in the viewing audience for Notre Dame, Virginia Saturday.
No,
that
I was
did not.
Not
pop up
I did
on
not
your
watch
weekend
the Notre
planning.
Dame, Virginia game.
Well, I also don't understand why you couldn't still do the net game.
I mean, you do everything.
Come on.
You're basically doing two games a day anymore. I mean,
how do you get from Nets Knicks to South Bend?
Quickly.
Come on. That's
I don't
not
know.
That bad.
14 hours? How does that happen?
A private jet. They should be giving you one.
You can't tell me you're flying like commercial planes, are you?
Yes.
Yeah, I hate to ruin this image that you have of me, but yeah, I'm lucky to be on the plane itself, anywhere, any row. Coach Middle,
on,
you name it.
Stop it. When you get on these planes, you're flying commercial, and you work as hard as anybody. You're everywhere. You're going to tell me people don't approach you constantly? Everybody knows who you are. Come on.
Yeah, I don't want to give away trade secrets, but I wear a Bobby Valentine mustache.
Checks in a hotel's under an assumed name.
I check in under Joe Benigno.
Oh, there you go. That works. Surprised you get into the hotel.
I've gotten some weird phone calls.
No, I could well imagine.
I tell you, the night of the Houston game, which was the most stunning of the stunning with the net wins this year, where they came back the way they came back, you were the soundtrack of it. And that was, I'm gonna go really far with this, Ian, your finest hour as a net announcer. That's how great it was. Just because you expressed the shock, the excitement, the I can't believe this is really happening. You expressed it so brilliantly. Where do you rank this in your net moments? Because for me, I think it may be number one. I got to tell you.
I think it came out of left field based on the circumstances. Oftentimes in a rally and a come-from-behind victory, you can feel it building. You can pick out a couple of moments at the 8:42 mark, at the 2:18 mark, whatever it might be. This one was done. The game felt like it was over. Richard Jefferson and I were basically going into next game mode and putting a bow on it. And then everything shifted in one fall swoop. Spencer Dinwiddie obviously went on that barrage. And the other part of it too, Evan, this is just the inside basketball part of it. You're so high upstairs in Houston. You're not courtside for the television broadcast. You're up and it's fairly high. So there's a detached feeling from the action that you're normally accustomed to in calling it, where you're right there. You feel like every moment you're there for a front row seat, and this is not. So it almost like it felt like you were watching this game from a bird's eye view, and in a way, it didn't feel real. It was borderline bizarre, to be honest.
It had to be before that, because they were playing really well before that. But is that the game that kind of said, wow, this team's really got something going here? There had to be a game before that where you felt that, though, Ian, right?
Yeah. Even just during the streak, there were moments along the way where you thought, okay, no longer can you just say this is a nice story.
Right,
you have
right.
to start thinking in terms of this team being legitimately good and being legitimately competitive. I think the Houston game opened up eyes on a national scale. Mm-hmm. That may have changed their persona from around the league, but if you're around the team all the time, you could see that part of their personality coming through, winning close games, clutch moments, and this eternal fight. They just battle time and time again, and I know that's something that should be considered standard in the NBA. We know that it's not, and this team has there's just never a sense of quit. There's a really strong chemistry and dynamic on this squad. I think Kenny Atkinson and his coaching staff have developed legitimate bonds. And you say, well, what does that mean? You know, the team either produces or it doesn't. I think there are a lot of things that go on behind the scenes when you're around someone like this that you realize contribute to not just wins, but a general feeling around the team of this is headed in the right direction and people believe in one another. There's a collaborative sense with this group.
What was strange about last night is now we're at a mode with the injuries that this team has, with LeVert still out, with Dinwiddie opting for the surgery, which is the right call, where D'Angelo Russell's their best player. It's not even really a debatable statement.
Yep.
He is their best player. And last night, a game that, you know, a couple hours before the game didn't feel very winnable. Then you hear Kyrie Irving's out, and you're like, oh, okay. Joe Harris is going to play. He was questionable. Okay. And they were hanging in even after that bad start. They're down 23-10. They're hanging
yep.
in. They take the lead. Russell is just, you know, he didn't even wasn't human in the third quarter.
No, he went off.
And then Kenny pulls him. And I didn't think much of it. I didn't think it was the lack of effort on the 50-50 rebound. I didn't think it was the turnover. I didn't think it was – I just thought he's giving him a blow. That's it. He's giving him a rest. And then he never went back to him. And I was disappointed. I still kind of am, because the game felt winnable. And the way Russell's been playing, it could have been him taking over the game. But the explanation after the game, where you've got the coach and the player – saying he was benched, essentially, for not giving that kind of effort. And the player, who could be an all-star, saying, I trust whatever the coach does, is sort of stunning. You don't hear about that with anybody in the NBA. Give me your thoughts on everything that went into that decision and what that says right now about both the coach and D'Angelo Russell, that he reacted that way to that benching last night.
Yeah, I think it goes a long way in explaining the relationship between Kenny Atkinson and D'Angelo Russell right now, the trust that those two have in one another, and the fact that Kenny does have lessons along the way. And we've seen it with D'Angelo. We saw it in his first year with the Nets. Even amidst the injuries, there were times where Kenny would pull D'Angelo, and sometimes it would be for a minute or 2 minutes of elapsed game action, and then send him right back onto the floor. Just because Russell has had an all-star type season doesn't mean that the teaching and the development goes away. So I think that's real. Kenny was upset. Russell did not go hard after a rebound, playing zone where you have to occupy that area. It ended up being a second chance opportunity for Jaylen Brown. He gets a jump shot on the baseline after the missed rebound attempt, and a decision was made. My sense was similar to yours, that Russell will get a breather and eventually you'll see him back in the game. Kenny's explanation afterwards had more to do with what took place on Russell's lack of effort on that play and less to do with the big picture. Although, you know, my sense would be they're hedging as well.
Right.
There's no reason that Kenny Atkinson should give the Chicago Bulls any incentive by coming out and saying publicly that, hey, we were thinking about the second night of a back-to-back. So it doesn't behoove him to say that, whether he believes it or not. It doesn't help the Brooklyn Nets in any way. And then the second part is, I do think that there is something to holding your best player accountable and what that means in your locker room. It goes a long way. This is not just the one game or the one quarter. There is a culture shift taking place, and to do that, you've got to make some tough decisions, and sometimes you've got to make decisions that might be deemed unpopular. Kenny Atkinson has made a lot of really good decisions with the big picture in mind, and I have to believe that this one was not made in haste.
Talking to the great Ian Eagle, well, what's your overall thoughts on this Anthony Davis situation right now?
Well, I understand it from his perspective and his representative's perspective. We know things have changed in the NBA. And if you're a superstar in this league, you have an incredible amount of leverage. If you're the Pelicans, I don't see any real incentive to move him right now and send him to his preferred destination unless the deal is exactly what you want. You don't benefit from it. There's nothing to gain. The same deal will be there after the trade deadline during the offseason, if indeed that's all you can get. And in fact, you might be able to include more teams. Just because Kawhi Leonard wanted out of San Antonio and wanted to go to L.A. didn't mean that San Antonio was trading him there. They made a decision that they felt was best for them. They waited through the offseason. They took the best deal that they thought they had. There's going to be a point with New Orleans where they're going to stop fielding phone calls and say, hey, enough. We're just going to take this thing to the offseason and do what we have to do. From the Davis perspective, I guess it's better to make it public, and it sounds as if the next step will be an indicator that he wants to play for the Los Angeles Lakers. That's not a shocker. But nowhere does it say that the New Orleans Pelicans have to agree to his wishes. They have to do what's best for them. My sense would be, unless this deal is perfectly set up for them now, there'd be no reason for them to make it.
You're right. And you know what else is best for them? And I don't know if this is going to happen. I'm just giving you my view. I wouldn't play him. If I'm the Pelicans, why would I play him the rest of February and March, where the guy can get hurt? He's obviously had injury history throughout his career.
Yep.
Maybe it's a serious injury. I probably prefer to get a great pick, so I don't even want to win games. He's not a part of my future. God knows what his teammates think about this. They probably wouldn't want him around. So I know it's bad for an NBA team and a player to willfully say, yeah, we're not going to play you for the next 3 months. But
yep.
Doesn't it kind of make sense, Ian, for both sides, for him to just be shut down?
Yeah. The only problem with that, Evan, is you still have to sell tickets. You still have to try to get people to show up, and you still have to get people to buy into your product. And that obviously is streamlined beyond just ticket sales, but selling hot dogs and burgers and beer and paraphernalia. I don't know if the cause and effect is as simple as that. I can't necessarily agree with you on the fact that his teammates may not want to be there with him. That's not always the case. I think from the outside looking in, from the fans' perspective, you think that it is a business. These guys know that. And a lot of players that would be in a similar position to Anthony Davis might take the same action. So I wouldn't go hard on that storyline, that narrative. I think he's still accepted in that locker room. If he plays, then they have better chance to win. And that does hurt their draft status. But the way things are set up now in the draft, and you guys obviously talk about this a great deal with the Knicks, there's no guarantee. You could have the worst record in the NBA now, and the percentages are not in your favor to get that number one pick. In fact, the percentages are actually more along the line of you dropping
yeah.
in the draft.
Yeah.
So it's a new game, and you've got to play the percentages if you're these teams. I know there's a lot of tanking going on right now in the NBA. The Nets play the Bulls tonight. Cavaliers are coming up on the schedule. The Phoenix Suns, there are teams that have putrid records in the league. It's not guaranteeing them anything right now.
No, you're 100% right. They changed those rules for this year. It's only 14.5%. And we've gone over this in depth, that winning the lottery doesn't also ensure you anything. I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo was 15 in the draft. Kawhi Leonard was 15. There's such a long list of that. Steph Curry was 7. Yet, with all that said, look at Chicago, look at the Knicks, look at Cleveland. They're still doing it. So despite the logic that it's not a huge percentage and it's no guarantee, it's not stopping the tanking. The tanking is still happening.
Yeah, and at some point you wave the white flag. You realize you don't have the personnel to compete, and if anything, you try to sell to your fan base, hey, we're developing, we're trying to figure out who's going to be a part of this. And you can't acknowledge and admit to the idea that you're going out and consciously trying to lose games. That's not within the spirit of the sport. So New Orleans is in a precarious position right now. We've heard rumors that they're now considering trading their other players and just emptying the barrel at this point and starting over. Look, the bottom line is, no matter where Anthony Davis goes, there are going to be draft picks involved and high draft picks potentially. That's, I'm sure, what their focus is in trying to get themselves another Anthony Davis. It's a weird cycle that these teams go through once you've hit a certain point, the expiration date hits with a superstar who no longer wants to be on your team. You're seeking out another superstar that you can grow with and you hope you can convince to stay long term. Look, New Orleans had chances trying to surround him with talent. It's not easy in the NBA, and you've got to hit it on these drafts. You mentioned it with the picks that were a bit lower. That's why Sean Marks is getting such high grades right for his tenure. He's hitting on all of these picks. That's not easy to do. That's what a GM's resume will read over time. You look back on their selections, of course, free agent signings and things, trades of that nature, but the draft is still the core. That's the backbone of how you're going to build your team.
Talking to the great Iron Eagle. Now, I got to switch over, obviously, to football, okay? And, you know, I don't know if you know, you probably know that, you know, Evan and I both wanted Mike McCarthy to be the coach of the Jets, so I was not thrilled at all about Adam Gase, even though I...
You know, I did hear something about that.
Okay,
yes.
So, all right. So, even though I've warmed up to it tremendously, especially with the addition of Greg Williams as defensive coordinator, I definitely have, you know, obviously this coaching staff is going to be far better than the one that we just had, which was as bad as it could possibly be. With that said, your overall thoughts on Adam Gase?
I thought Gase was the right hire. That was my feeling when the candidates were out there, including Mike McCarthy. I thought for Sam Darnold, for what the Jets are trying to do, what they're trying to build offensively, Gase was the better choice. Our dealings in production meetings are, of course, a little bit more than the average media member because you get one-on-one time with these coaches, and the hope is that not only do you get some nuggets that you can use in the broadcast, but you get a feel for the team. You get a feel for the coach. It's not comprehensive. You're not going through every single line of his philosophy and how he goes about it, but you get a feel for personality and you get a feel for how they go about their business. All my dealings with Adam Gase on a personal level have been very positive in what he thinks about the game, how he coaches the game, and yes, the results with Miami have been mediocre. They've been tepid. He's dealt with a bunch of injuries. My feeling is that he will connect with Sam Darnold. Those two will form a good relationship. And to me, that was the bottom line in this hire, was to find someone that was going to connect with the face of your franchise and the player that you believe in that can carry you for the next 10 years. That's not to say that Mike McCarthy would not have connected, but just in my personal dealings, my feeling was Gase would be a better fit personality-wise with Sam Darnold compared to Mike McCarthy.
We should have had you on that day because you may have been able to successfully calm us down. Because
I didn't get the call. Where was the phone call that day?
I sort of trust you. I remember you telling me about Evan Turner. You were breaking down his game and you nailed it. You were spot on with him. And even though it's a completely different sport and we're talking about a different job, I don't know. I don't think I would have reacted by yelling at you the way we yelled at just about everybody else. I think in a way we would have been like, all right, you know what, maybe Ian's got something here. You know, maybe he's actually right.
Well, like I said, I feel a lot better about it now. I mean, I have to say, I mean, especially because they hired Greg Williams, who I think, you know, I have these nuts. I envision this, Ian, you know me, being the wacko I am. And it's only been 50 years. I mean, you know, what's another 50? But I envision this like, you know, it's Ditka and Buddy Ryan, you know, the 85 Bears, and they're carrying both of them off the field as they win the Super Bowl, you know? You know what I mean?
But here's the thing, Joe. If the Rams win the Super Bowl, that will happen in my mind.
You think so?
You will see
Wade
McVay lifted,
okay,
and I think you'll see Wade Phillips lifted.
Really? Okay.
That's the kind of dynamic that has developed there. When we've sat down with Sean McVay, he's been brutally honest in our questions regarding the defense. Not to say that he doesn't pay attention, not to say he doesn't get to know those guys, not to say he doesn't put his head in the meetings, but he acknowledged that he handed it to Wade Phillips. That hire was made. Les Snead and Sean McVay made the hire with the idea that that's Wade's baby. He runs the defense.
Right.
I think it's a similar situation here with the Jets. That was the selling point to Greg Williams. And I'm sure the other selling point for Greg is have some success in New York, truly turn this thing around, and maybe you do get on a list of the next coaching carousel.
Right.
That's got to be part of the process.
Oh, yeah.
If they have that kind of success, I think your vision, as wacky as you think it might be, that's probably the way that the Jets hierarchy is envisioning it as well.
Sure. And you know what? With what he did in Cleveland, I know it didn't translate into him getting another head coaching job, but you've coupled that with doing a good job with the Jets, you're probably right. He probably would get a head coaching job down the road. That's fine. As long as he delivers the Jets a Super Bowl,
he'll
go wherever the hell he wants.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And the Cleveland thing, the decision was made with Baker Mayfield in mind. He was comfortable with Freddie Kitchens. They had success on offense. I think they liked Kitchens and his way. He's not a frontline guy where he's going to take all of the attention, where he's going to demand the spotlight. They've dealt with that already, and they needed to turn the page. So I think they made the right decision to try to pacify and placate their quarterback, and they like the guy. They like Kitchens. And Greg Williams did enough in that job to remind people that he really does know how to coordinate a defense and how to rile up his guys. That's what the Jets needed. They needed some kind of edge coming off of what we've seen the last few years. There is talent on that side of the ball.
No
they're going to have to make some changes, as we know. There are going to be some additions. But there's enough talent that you could see someone coordinating it and getting better results.
Because I think I remember in the past you telling us that you do the Super Bowl, but you do it for, like, China, or you do it for Washington
what are you
or something.
For?
Yeah, I do it on Korean internet. No, I'm working the pregame show with CBS on a secondary set. So pregame, NFL Today, and then postgame on CBS Sports Network. So I will be down in Atlanta going later this week.
So that means, let me just get this straight. So you're not going to be in Orlando Saturday night. You skip it out on that game. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, you skip it out on the Monday game against Brooke Lopez's return. Am I right about that?
Well, I think your dates are a little off because I will make that.
Oh, you will make
that? I will make that.
Oh, okay.
I will make that. The Thursday San Antonio game, that's not real.
What? Well, why?
Yeah.
That's Thursday.
Can the guy get a break?
Why can't
the guy?
Can't,
only does his work, the guy.
That's a big game, Ian.
It's
unbelievable. Going to Texas, you know, Sean Marks against the old teacher. What are you doing?
You're not doing a college game Saturday?
No college game Saturday. No. The Super Bowl is the thing. That's,
no, I don't
that's
know. But I, you know, knowing you, you'll bat. You know, I don't know. You'll do maybe. Who knows? You know, Georgia Tech Pitt, and you're. You know, and it's local, and here we go. Right? It could be.
This is reminding me very much of a similar conversation that I had with Mad Dog Russo when he was trying to analyze my travel. And Chris has a fascination with the type of airplanes that I would be taking. So he would say, "You're in Kansas City on a Sunday, will you be flying? Will that be an Embraer?
Embraer
back to Newark? Will you be in the A row? Will you be sitting in an 8A or in the CD combo?
CD combo? Sounds like something you buy at a fast food restaurant. CD combo.
Oh,
what
boy. Ian, you got to understand, it's love, okay? It's like, I'm going to the Nets game tonight, right? And I'm not going to get to hear you on TV, which is unfortunate, but whatever
and
I
Richard
go...
And the great Richard Jefferson, too.
If he's doing, I don't know if he's doing the game tonight.
No,
it's
Jimmy Spanarkle.
Okay. And so whenever I go to a Nets game, I got to spend the day in the city, so I'm away from my wife. And she always, you know, feels bad I'm gone. So she's like, oh, well, you're leaving all day. And it almost feels like she's mad at me. She's not mad at me. She's going to miss me. It's the same thing, bro. Yeah. It's not that I'm mad. It's that I'm going to miss... I want to turn on the Nets game, and here I, an Eagle, you know, calling... Russell for three, or it's a foreign facial, or it's a throw down. Like, I want to hear that stuff. That's all. I miss you.
Yeah, I'm feeling the love.
And let me say this, too. Even though it hasn't really translated the last couple of years, you know what I mean? Okay. And you did call that Buffalo disaster in 2015. I still have that, you know, when I see you and Fouts doing a game, I feel better. I mean, seriously, I don't know what it is. Like the Jet game and Ian's doing the game. Like, even my wife's like, oh, you know, Ian's doing the game. Like you feel better about it. You know what I mean?
I wish I could bottle this and put it in some kind of pill form for you, Joe. Something that could ease the stress throughout your life. Just on a random June Tuesday, you could just pop a pill and you feel better. You feel better.
Like you did, I'll never forget too. Because let's go back to 15. You did the game against the Patriots the week before when
That's
they beat
right.
him in overtime, and I could just and I'm like, wow, man. And then when you were doing the Buffalo game, I'm like, oh my god, I am so pumped up for this. So, but even with that, it's just there's this sense of security when you do eject.
It's true.
As ridiculous as that is, it really is that way.
It did, but it felt, Ian, like you did fewer jet games this year. Is that accurate?
Because they stunk. Why would they? I mean, you know, he's like the, I guess you're the number two team behind Nance and Romo, I guess, on CBS. So, I mean, what are you going to stick him on? Oh, let's let him have to do the jet bill game. I mean, like, come on.
How many did you end up doing this year? Do you know off the top of your head?
I think I had four when it was all said and done.
What's it usually? Yeah. Is it usually higher? It's got to be higher.
Yeah, it's been higher in previous years, six or sometimes, and probably more like six. That would be the height of it.
I'm very similar to Joe in that I have these weird fantasies about my teams that are very unrealistic, but I like to fantasize about it. Like, you know, Adam Gase being, you know, carried off along with Greg Williams.
Right, right.
I've been starting to have these weird fantasies about getting a shot at the Warriors in the NBA Finals.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
I know I shouldn't. I know it's stupid. I know it's insane. Wow. So do
is
me
that this year?
Yeah, this year. Okay. Of course.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
What are you talking about?
Bloody Warriors will still be winning titles. I mean, if Durant stays there, they're going to keep winning.
That's right. In all seriousness, what is a realistic expectation? Because I thought coming in mid-30s, then they're 8-18. I'm figuring they're going nowhere. You know, maybe they'll get Zion Williamson. Now they're three games above 500. They are dealing with a lot of injuries. And, you know, who knows? LeVert and Dinwiddie could be back postseason time. Be real with me, Ian, because I trust you. You're a trusting voice. What's a reasonable expectation for this season?
You know, I feel like I'm an underqualified doctor during a therapy session right now for both of you. I want to answer that question for you, Evan.
Yes.
I really do. I think this season has been different stages, and you relayed your feeling of acceptance at some point early during the 8-game losing streak. Okay, yeah. Now it's just a tank for Zion Williamson. And then the buildup of euphoria when it hits you that the team is actually good and competitive and exciting and respectable and relevant, which is probably the biggest word of all, when you don't feel like you're part of the league for a long stretch. And now all of a sudden people are talking about you, you're featured on different highlight shows, and it's not embarrassing to say that you root for the Nets and follow the Nets. The stage they're in now is, I think, trying to figure out what they can be when the smoke clears, and the schedule is the one part that you have to take a look at.
Yes, it's brutal.
The March schedule is going to be really challenging.
Yes.
Really challenging.
No doubt.
Now, the way that the Eastern Conference is set up, there's a finite number of teams that will actually be in the hunt here for playoff spots. And you'll see movement, in my mind, from 6 all the way down through 10. You're talking about the potential of 5 teams fighting for 3 spots, more or less, putting Detroit in there and putting Washington as the other 2 that are currently on the outside looking in. The way that things are going to ramp up, a lot of it's going to have to do with what kind of lead the Nets have actually formed for that 6 or 7 spot.
Right.
And whether or not Washington is truly motivated, which they might be, only just to prove that they can win without John Wall. That's been enough motivation for them.
They're a different team without him. It's like they hate
they
him.
Are. They are. And they're going to have to make a really big decision during the offseason. I don't know who's going to take that contract at the money that he's making. And just think about that from a Nets perspective, Evan. Truly. For someone who so desperately wanted John Wall.
I know. I know. I've learned from my mistakes.
It's amazing how things change. I'm just doing my notes here for the Chicago Bulls tonight, and Jabari Parker pops up. This guy was the number 2 pick in the 2014 draft.
Yeah.
We thought he was going to be a impact player in this league. And he had a decent run in Milwaukee, 2 serious injuries, but you thought he could be a player that could be a factor. He's now 23 years old, and I don't know what direction his career is going to go in. That's how quickly things can change in this league. And it amazes me that there are GMs that are ready for that, can adjust to it, and then there are some that cannot, and the bottom just drops out on a team.
No, I understand. Mm. I understand that this half hour just flew by.
Really did.
You killed it.
You're not doing baseball anytime soon, are you?
Joe, do you want me to stay married?
I think we had this conversation already.
Yeah. Yes. No, we
now that you mentioned that.
You get the summer. You get most of the summer to spend time with the family.
Yeah. How's your son doing, by the way? He's going to be
He's doing great.
He's going to be the
next
you.
I don't want to scare you, but he's a senior.
Oh, my God. Like really?
It's over. Yeah, that little kid you met is now
graduating.
Where
does he go? Does he go to Cuse as well?
Oh, yeah.
He does, yeah. He's a Cuse guy. He was down at Cuse Duke for the upset. He got to call that one down in Durham. Yeah,
wow.
Awesome experience.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a good follower on Twitter, so follow Noah Eagle.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Oh, yeah,
I don't
Twitter.
Do Twitter,
I think
God.
That's Ian's way of being on Twitter because he doesn't have Twitter.
Like, well, I'm right there with him on that.
You guys are smart.
Oh, yeah. We just live vicariously. That's all.
Ian, we appreciate it all
Ian,
the time.
It's always a pleasure, bro.
All right, guys. Great talking to you. See you soon. All right.
I appreciate it, Ian.
The great Ian Eagle.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.